A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to give you that crucial context you need for the big topics. And today, well, we're pulling back the curtain a bit. We're looking into a world that's often, you know, misunderstood, definitely romanticized, but totally fundamental to how things work. The history of espionage.
Yeah, spying. It sounds like movies, but it's much deeper.
Exactly. We've been diving into Christy McCrackus's book, Espionage, A Concise History. It's really authoritative. You might picture spies like Cold War stuff or, you know, James Bond. But McCrackus argues the real history. Much more fascinating. So our mission today is to unpack this story from ancient times right up to cyber warfare and really get why it's always been so central to statecraft.
And what jumps out right away from her work is, look, espionage isn't new. It's not some modern invention. It's constant. I mean, the tools change like crazy, right? Pigeons, poison, now it's satellites and algorithms. But the basic human drive, seeking that edge through secrets, that's always there.
That makes sense. It's the why behind it all.
Precisely. And that's why understanding this long history really matters for you now. It gives you the framework, you know? For understanding today's challenges, think about global cyber attacks or debates on digital privacy or just, well, international tensions. Mm-hmm. You're essentially looking at intelligence practices that have been honed for thousands of years. It's kind of the hidden operating system of global power.
Okay, so let's talk about the author, Christy McCrackus. You said she's got some serious credentials.
Oh, absolutely. She's a distinguished historian, focuses on science and intelligence. She's at Georgia Tech. Really brings something unique to the table.
Unique how? What's her angle?
Well, her expertise is interesting because she really zeroes in on the how, like the mechanics of it all. She wrote a previous book, Seduced by Secrets, all about the East German Stasi's spy technology.
Ah, the Stasi. Right. Weren't they famous for having, like, millions of regular people as informants?
Yeah.
Very low tech, in a way.
Exactly. But they combined it with high tech, too. And that detailed work she did on the Stasi, looking at both the tech and the human side, that's what makes her perspective so powerful in this book. She's not just looking at the political results, you know, who won the war or whatever. She's analyzing the mechanisms. How did they do it?
So it's a scientific or technological lens almost.
Pretty much. She sees intelligence partly as an applied science. She traces the history of everything from invisible inks, cipher machines, right up to modern digital tools.
So she connects the dots. Like the thinking behind some old cipher machine isn't totally disconnected from modern cyber stuff.
That's exactly her point. It's a very practical, almost engineering-like look at a subject usually treated just politically. She bridges that gap between tech history and intelligence history.
Okay, so let's get into the book itself, Espionage, A Concise History. What's the main argument? If she's tracing this long evolution, what's driving it? You mentioned co-evolution.
Yes, that's the core idea. Her central thesis is that espionage isn't just one thing. It's this complex, dynamic ecosystem.
Yeah.
And it's defined by the constant back and forth between human ingenuity spies, informants, analysts, that's human
intelligence.
Right. And technological innovation codes, listening devices, satellites, cyber tools. It's techint, technical intelligence.
So they evolve together.
Precisely. It's not like tech just replaces people. It's a perpetual arms race between the two, constantly pushing each other forward. And the book covers this huge sweep of time. I mean, literally ancient Mesopotamia, Sun Tzu, all the way to today's digital surveillance state. Her aim is really to demystify it, show that intelligence isn't some sideshow. It's central to history.
And she wants to correct misunderstandings. Right. It's not all trench coats and dead drops.
Not at all. It's often about meticulous process. The book really tackles that core strategic problem. How do nations actually find, protect, and then use secret information to get an advantage? And how has that changed over time?
Okay, let's trace that co-evolution she talks about. Where does it start? Ancient world.
Yeah, she establishes right away this is one of humanity's oldest organized activities.
Yes.
You look at Sun Tzu's The Art of War, there's a whole chapter just on using different kinds of spies. Makes it clear, intelligence is essential for winning.
So pure human E back then.
Pretty much. Think about the Roman Empire. How did they control that massive territory?
Yeah.
Through vast human networks, scouts, couriers, these guys called speculators.
Speculators.
Yeah, basically reconnaissance troops and informants.
Yeah.
The whole system ran on fast human communication, local knowledge. You needed trusted people on the ground. No fancy tech, just humans.
Okay, so when does the tech start creeping in and changing things?
Well, things shift when states begin to, like, professionalize spying and bring in early technical methods. You see this big time in the Renaissance in the early modern period. The key figure McCrackets points to is Sir Francis Walsingham.
Queen Elizabeth I's spymaster.
That's the one. Walsingham is crucial because he set up one of the first truly modern centralized intelligence services. He wasn't just relying on rumors or random agents. He formalized the craft. And specifically, he professionalized cryptography code making and cryptanalysis code breaking.
Like with the Babington plot.
Exactly. That was a plot against Elizabeth I, all done through complex coded messages. Walsingham's team broke the code, exposed the plot, saved the queen. It showed the power of combining human agents with early signals intelligence, or SIGINT. That's the turning point, really. Spying becomes a state-sponsored craft.
So Walsingham sets up the state framework. Then comes the industrial age, telegraph, railroads.
Yeah.
How did those big tech shifts affect the spy game? Did it make it easier?
Yeah.
Harder?
Both. Definitely both. The telegraph and railroads, they revolutionized communication and movement. Suddenly, secrets could travel way faster and farther.
Which creates new opportunities for spying.
Right. Intercepting messages became much more valuable. But it also created huge new vulnerabilities. Everything's moving faster. It's harder to track.
You see this playing out in the American Civil War, don't you? They were pioneering things like Signal Corps, using flags and telegraphs for intelligence.
Absolutely. And think about the Great Game, that big rivalry between the British and Russian empires fighting for influence in Central Asia. Getting accurate, timely intelligence about mountain passes, troop movements, rival agents. That was everything. Without it, you'd overextend and collapse. Tech, like the telegraph, was vital there.
But the real revolution for tech comes later, right? World War I.
Yeah. WWI is the inflection point. That's when you get massive industrialized spying. And it becomes heavily reliant on radio intercepts. The Germans used encrypted wireless messages constantly. So the British set up Room 40, basically their code-breaking headquarters.
And Room 40 scored that massive coup with the Zimmerman telegram.
Huge. It wasn't just military intel. It was a diplomatic bombshell. Germany secretly proposing an alliance with Mexico against the U.S.
And breaking that code helped pull the U.S. into the war.
It absolutely did. And that's McCrackets' point in action, isn't it? A single piece of technical intelligence, when decrypted and used effectively, can literally change the course of world history.
Which brings us neatly to World War II. Bletchley Park, OLTRA, often seen as the peak of integrated intelligence.
Definitely. But McCrackets is careful here. It wasn't just about the amazing tech, like the bomb machines cracking Enigma.
Right, but it needed the people, too. Alan Turing and all those analysts.
So precisely. She hammers this home. The bomb machines were just hunks of metal without the brilliant human cryptanalysts. They were the ones interpreting the raw data, spotting the crucial patterns, figuring out what it meant, and getting it to the commanders who needed it.
And the results were incredible. OLTRA intelligence arguably shortened the war by years.
Possibly 2 years, yeah. It's the perfect example of that human techint symbiosis being absolutely decisive.
Okay, moving past WWII, the Cold War, often called the Golden Age of Spying. What defined that era?
Well, it was intense on both fronts. You had incredible techint advancements, spy satellites giving you eyes in the sky, the U-2 spy planes flying incredibly high.
But also intense human rivalry, CIA versus KGB, defectors, moles, dead drops, the classic stuff.
Exactly. And you can't talk Cold War without mentioning the East German Stasi again. You mentioned your earlier work on them.
Right, and McCrackets uses them as a key case study, doesn't she?
She does. It's kind of a chilling example of perfecting the combination. They had sophisticated tech bugs, wiretaps, surveillance gear, but they combined it with this incredibly vast, low-tech network of human informants. Maybe up to 2 million inoffizial Mitarbeiter, they called them. Ordinary people spying on neighbors, colleagues, even family.
What?
Yeah. They created this almost perfectly monitored state. It showed how human betrayal and tech surveillance could lock together to maintain total control. A dark example of this symbiosis.
And that leads us towards the present day. The digital frontier, as she calls it. What's the big shift now? Terrorism. Cyber.
Those are huge, yes. But the fundamental paradigm shift McCrackets highlights is something else. It's the move from information scarcity to information surplus.
Ah, so it used to be hard to get secrets. Now the problem is?
Drowning in data. It's everywhere. Edward Snowden's revelations, for instance, showed this massive global SIGINT architecture built to just hoover up everything.
So the challenge changes.
Completely. It's not about finding a needle in a haystack anymore. It's about finding the right needle in a stack of needles. the power shifts to those who control the access, the filters, the algorithms. That's arguably more important now than the agent in the field.
Okay, so looking back across this whole history, what are the big takeaways, the core themes that keep coming up?
Well, the first one is right where we started, the enduring symbiosis. McCrackis completely rejects the idea that technology makes the human spy obsolete. It just doesn't work that way.
Right. Tech collects the data, but humans make sense of it.
Exactly. Context, intent, judgment. That takes a human brain. And think about it. This applies to so many jobs today, right? You have tons of data that's your tetchent, but it's just noise until human insight, your human, turns it into something useful, actionable knowledge.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. What's another theme?
The relentless arms race. This is constant. Every time someone invents a better way to spy, a clever code, a new surveillance tech, someone else immediately starts working on a way to counter it, a way to break the code, evade the surveillance.
Like offense and defense in sports almost.
Kind of, yeah. It's this constant push and pull. And that dynamic is basically the engine behind modern cybersecurity, isn't it? We're always patching, updating, anticipating the next attack because the code breakers never stop trying to beat the code makers. No advantage lasts forever.
Okay, a third theme. I liked her point about demystifying the spy, taking away the glamour.
Me too. The reality, she argues, is usually less James Bond, much more, well, meticulous analyst, or technician, or even just a civil servant stuck dealing with paperwork and bureaucracy.
The organizational side of things.
Yes. And that's crucial because she points out that major intelligence failures, think about the lead up to 9/11, for example, often aren't about a lack of data. They're bureaucratic failures. Agencies not sharing info, getting stuck in groupthink, failing to connect the dots. Organizational problems, not necessarily technical ones.
And finally, there's that underlying tension she highlights throughout.
The perpetual tension, yeah. The constant historical conflict between the state's need for security, wanting secrets, needing surveillance, and core democratic values like privacy, openness, government oversight.
That struggle feels very current.
It is the core debate today, isn't it? Every time we talk about government surveillance, online privacy, data collection, we're wrestling with that exact same historical tension. Where do you draw the line between necessary security and potential government overreach? It's maybe the central political question of our digital age.
The book really captures these big ideas well. There are some lines that just stick with you, like the very basic one, espionage is as old as human conflict itself. It just frames it as fundamental.
Yeah, emerging whenever one group wanted an edge over another through secrets. It's basic human competition.
And I thought this was powerful too about technology. Each technological revolution has simultaneously expanded intelligence capabilities and created new vulnerabilities. That double-edged sword idea.
Always. The new tool opens doors, but it also creates new ways to be attacked or exposed.
And connecting back to that human element, even with all the tech, the most sophisticated technical intelligence capabilities are worthless without skilled human analysts. Judgment is key.
Still irreplaceable. Which leads right into that modern challenge she describes so well. In the 21st century, the great challenge is a suffocating surplus of information. The mission is to find the right needle in a stack of needles.
That perfectly captures the big data problem everyone's facing, not just spies.
Absolutely. Okay, so how can you, the listener, actually use this history? Well, one clear way is media literacy and fighting disinformation. Knowing that propaganda and influence ops have been tools of spying and statecraft for centuries gives you a critical lens for today's news. You start asking, okay, who benefits if I believe this story? What's the angle here?
That's a great point. And another application is just basic digital security. Understanding how codes have always been broken, how communications have always been vulnerable, it makes you take modern cybersecurity more seriously. Your encryption, your strong passwords, those are basically the modern equivalent of the old one-time pads spies used.
Yeah.
Knowing that weaknesses will be exploited makes you more careful.
Definitely. And you can even extend this to business or organizational risk. The methods intelligence analysts use systematic gathering of info, carefully evaluating sources, trying to avoid biases like groupthink. Those are directly applicable to making better decisions in any competitive environment.
So, learning from historical intel, failures to avoid similar pitfalls in your own planning or company strategy.
Exactly. Avoid ignoring those dissenting views, for instance.
You know, what really struck me doing this deep dive wasn't actually the cloak and dagger stuff. Fun as that is, it was, like you said earlier, the sheer organizational reality of it all.
Yeah.
The people who often made the biggest difference weren't necessarily the agents in the field, but the quiet cryptographers, the analysts piecing things together, the managers handling the flow of information. or data today. It's less glamorous, but maybe more important.
For me, the lasting insight from Makrakis is that this core struggle between secrecy and discovery, between security needs and democratic values, it isn't over. History shows that surveillance powers, once granted, tend to grow. They often extend way beyond what they were originally intended for. So the need for vigilance, for oversight, for an informed public, that remains absolutely crucial. It's part of being an engaged citizen in the world we live in now.
A really essential history for understanding our times then. A fantastic guide. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.